Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around for a breakdown of the day's top stories in the Chicago area at the end of this episode. But first, it is April 22nd, which means today is Earth Day. But caring for the planet doesn't have to be a once-a-year thing. So what does it actually look like to stay connected to nature year-round? On this episode of the pod, we'll talk to a panel of conservationists about how individuals can make meaningful change against some of the pressing threats to our environment and nurture new habits to keep the Earth Day spirit alive. At the table was Nitya Jaka, who's with Chicago's Eat for Impact initiative, which brings sustainable dining options to restaurants across the city. Seth Magley, who's senior director of the Urban Wildlife Institute at the Lincoln Park Zoo, and Gina Roxas, who's a citizen of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation and executive director of Trickster Cultural Center. I started by asking them all to weigh in on what felt most pressing and like a top priority in their respective fields. Seth went first.
Yeah, when I think about Earth Day, I think about how do we remind folks that no matter where you live in a form of nature, that there's interesting animals that live all around you, and trying to help people remember that that could be a cause for celebration. It's exciting to think about our city as a wild place.
Yeah. Nitya, what comes to mind when it comes to food sustainability?
Yeah, absolutely. What we choose to eat every day is a choice that we get to make throughout our lives. And when we have the opportunity to choose products that are environmentally conscious and climate forward, that's really what's been top of mind for me.
Mm-hmm. How about when it comes to land conservation, Gina?
Yes, community wellness. Building relationships using art, culture, land-based learning as pathways to healing through traditional indigenous knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And sure, we'll dig more into that, of course. But, you know, also top of mind, I think, for some Chicagoans, we've got this growing number of data centers here in the state, a quantum campus coming to the south side, just a lot of concerns swirling right now about the impact this new technology will have on the environment. Gina, can you lay out for us what's at stake?
Sure. It's not just viewing land as a resource or commodity. It's also when we shift our vision to our perspective of land as a relationship, as a kin, as a relative, then there is so much to lose. It's not just the resource. It's not just the clean water or the land, but it's community. It's entire neighborhoods in the Chicago area. It's language. On all the stories and history, land has stories to share. And when we don't listen, that's when we start getting in trouble.
Yeah, Seth?
Yeah, when I think about any big projects like that, my job is always to think about how do we give animals a seat at the table there? Because so much of our city is developed and we don't think about how it affects the plants and the animals. And when we don't think about them, we often end up with a lot of the ones we don't want, right? The rats and things of that nature. We've been working, for example, closely with the Obama Presidential Center folks to make sure that animals are considered as part of that process.
Oh, really?
We stand ready to talk to any sort of large project about how can we make this less negative for animals and maybe even positive for them.
And Nitya, talk about, you know, the impact of new projects and new technology like this on food systems.
Yeah, for sure. So since AI data centers are massive, largely unregulated water users, especially in Chicago, that means competition for water resources. So for food systems, untracked and unregulated water extraction could be a direct threat to the surrounding communities, especially for regional agriculture and food system supply chains.
So Seth, let's talk more about your world here. Some Chicagoans, I think, are quite fascinated with wildlife, right? Over the years, we've talked about Chunkosaurus, right? We were so obsessed with Monty and Rose, the piping plovers, the foxes in Millennium Park, coyotes all over. Why do we have such a love affair with wildlife?
That's a great question. I think that many people have an intrinsic need to be connected to the natural world. And I think that's true even when you're in the heart of a city. I noticed this a lot during COVID when people were stuck inside. I was getting so many calls from people who were saying, I've got to get outside. I'd look out my window and I'm seeing coyotes. I'm seeing squirrels. This is so cool. So think about the fact that we name our sports teams after animals, right? There's just something about the natural world that calls to us no matter where we are. And I've been really excited to see more and more urban people really embracing our wildlife neighbors, including animals that maybe didn't get a lot of love traditionally, like bats or coyotes.
Yeah. And what would you say is the mission for folks who don't know too much about the Urban Wildlife Institute? What is the mission for wildlife?
Yeah, our mission is to make cities part of the process of protecting biodiversity. We want to make sure that when we think about cities, we don't think of them as places just for people alone, but as places where people and wildlife can thrive together.
How does the diversity of wildlife impact the environment?
Well, it impacts the environment in a lot of ways, but it also impacts us. We know from a lot of research, both sort of classical Western scientific research, but also knowledge from indigenous folks, mm-hmm. that we all do better. We have better health outcomes, both physical and mental health, when we're connected to nature, when we have access to green spaces and the wildlife that are a part of them. So it really is part of this envelope we think of as One Health, this
so
notion
it,
that
it improves our quality of life.
Exactly. It does that in many, many ways.
Nithya, what does food sustainability, when we talk about that, we throw that term around all the time, but what does it actually mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it really means making, to the best of your ability, a choice that is climate forward when you're choosing dining options and food options. So a lot of times that can mean choosing products or foods that have lower greenhouse gas emissions and use less resources in terms of land and water.
Tell us more about how you're working on this with the Eat for Impact initiative.
Yeah, of course. So the Eat for Impact initiative in Chicago ran during the month of March, and there were three local restaurants in the Chicago area that brought climate forward menu items to their existing menu for the month of March. And some of those included vegetable-focused salads, as well as wraps with plant-based protein sources. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we were able to contribute a lot to greenhouse gas emission savings, and all of the participating restaurants made commitments to keep at least one of those specials on their menu continuously.
Oh, wow. And so we understand fully, how does frequent dining out impact the environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when we're dining out, we always have options to choose from the menu. And sometimes there are options that are more climate friendly, and that can include things that are made with local produce, or they're focused on plants and vegetables, fruits and grains. And some other options that are more meat and dairy focused can sometimes contribute to higher emissions or more land consumption, as well as water consumption. So when we're making that choice as a diner, it can be really impactful to the entire city's community to choose something that is more environmentally conscious.
Gina, let me pivot to you. Talk to me about Trickster Cultural Center. What should folks know about you guys?
We are, our home base is in Schaumburg, Illinois. We are a Native American-led cultural arts center providing not just for Native Americans, but for all folks, opportunities for learning from each other, learning culture, connecting to nature, reestablishing a relationship with nature through land-based activities and youth groups, as well as educational speaking opportunities.
Mm. Tell me more about those land-based activities and land stewardship, which is a principal mission.
Yes. So our mission is multifolded, multifaceted, but it is land-centered, land-based. We hold seasonal cultural camps with our families, but not only that, which is just as important, we also work with conservation groups, park districts, forest preserves, to not just be there as a talking piece or a side piece, but also as part of the decision-making process, mm. working towards policy in Illinois for land protection, water protection, and also reconnecting those relationships.
The relationship piece, let's dig more into that. How do we make that bond with the land, especially in a place like this where it's a very urban environment?
Yeah, that's a really great question. When we talk about traditional stewardship or restoration efforts, which is kind of an odd term, traditional, that's more of a Western style. But our tradition in many indigenous cultures, we are not outside of the land. We are part of the land. We are in relationship with the land and the water and the all of the other living beings. Seeing our environment through the lens of animacy and not just as objects.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about some traditional indigenous life ways and how they're practiced today.
Yeah. So many of us are practicing our life ways today through these partnerships with other organizations and Western groups to continue our foraging or hunting practices, to continue the stories that we've been given, the songs and the languages as a hub for learning, not just for our Native American communities to connect to their culture, but for all of us to connect to our culture, the culture of environment.
Very interesting. Nitya, let's pivot back to Eat for Impact. Tell me more about the restaurants that your organization is working with and how they are actually actively working to change their processes to have a more positive impact on our planet.
Yeah, absolutely. We partnered for the month of March with three restaurants across the city of Chicago, and they're all located in different neighborhoods in the city. And each restaurant added either two or three specials to their existing menus. And these specials focus on climate-forward dining options to make sustainable dining accessible to everyone in the city of Chicago. So if all of those restaurants, assuming that they continue to serve around 2.5 specials per day, mm-hmm. that would be an annual reduction of 160,000 kilograms in greenhouse gas emissions.
Wow. What does food sustainability look like for people in food deserts who don't have access to farmers markets or grocers, Nitya?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And food sustainability is always about making the choices that you can reasonably make. So that might include incorporating as many fruits or vegetables into your existing dining schedule as however that looks like for you. Mm-hmm. And it could also include just making those climate-focused swaps to the best of your own ability, regardless of what resources you have.
Yeah. And Seth, back to the wildlife piece of this, there's an Urban Wildlife Institute study, actually, that it says more wildlife diversity happens in wealthy, gentrified communities rather than underfunded ones. Talk us through that. Why is that the case?
Yeah, so one of the things we see with animals in cities is they're very keyed in on specific aspects of different neighborhoods. They don't just live anywhere. They know exactly where they want to go. And we do find that different communities have different wildlife diversity. And we have found in our research, not just in Chicago, actually, but in a network of cities we study all around the world, that these wealthier neighborhoods tend to have more diversity. And you can even pick up on that as neighborhoods gentrify. You will see a slight uptick. We don't actually know the mechanisms behind that, but it probably has to do with generally how these neighborhoods are served, mm-hmm. right? They're served by folks that are planting different trees, different sort of green spaces that these animals might use, maybe even how the garbage is collected, things like that. But it just contributes generally to the fact that we know that folks don't experience nature the same way. It's not equitably distributed. Mm-hmm. And that's really important because of the reasons we talked about earlier. Nature is good for people. We want everyone to have access to that.
How can we change that?
Well, I think the first step is to be aware of it, but then, you know, that's not something that a biologist like me can do alone. That's something that we work with politicians, we work with land developers, architects to really think about why are some neighborhoods not serving their people and their wildlife the right way? How do we distribute the resources towards where they need to get it? It's a big project, but I think it's something that, for my part, I sort of speak for the animal part of it, but it is important to think about making sure that everyone has access to the benefits of nature.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, right, this year's Earth Day theme is all about mobilizing community to action. How are you thinking through that, Gina?
Yes. So one of the things that I have been reflecting on is where I grew up. I grew up on the southeast side of Chicago, a small little neighborhood called The Bush, right under the Skyway. Mm-hmm. And talk about resilience. I'm so proud of them and the communities that have gone through and continue there. When I was younger, I did not know that the soil that you play in was not supposed to be pitch black and sparkle at night. That was a product of those steel mills. And now it's at least about four generations now of the resiliency of just that one little neighborhood, amplifying their voices to be heard, to talk against these large infrastructures and all of these disenfranchisement of communities, as well as the environment and just how they have just taken up the helm to amplify their voice, along with other neighborhoods to amplify voice. I love to be part of that. It's just a
small
wonderful
but mighty.
Yes. And our youth, just our youth being able to, just seeing these youth come out and show up and demanding, just making demands for the basic necessities of clean water, clean land, clean air.
You know, we'll be talking in the next hour on WBEZ's Say More about what's giving us hope right now. So I'd love to hear from you, Seth, some of the progress that you've seen over the years that gives you hope for the future.
Well, it's amazing some of the animal species that we haven't seen much of that are suddenly everywhere, that have really kind of had a big rebound. One example is flying squirrels. Everybody's calling me about the flying squirrels now in their window boxes and in their yards. I think it's really cool to see them. And then think about otters, right? The Chicago River for a long time was so polluted that we couldn't imagine a species like an otter being seen there. And now we're starting to see them more and more. So our city's becoming a little bit wilder. I think that's worth celebrating.
What's giving you hope, Gina?
Yeah, the introduction of bison in the state of Illinois. Many of these different projects with bison and the inclusion of indigenous voice in that and indigenous knowledge. That is just something that is, I wouldn't have ever even thought that that would be possible in my lifetime.
How much of an impact can an individual like me make when we've got corporations dumping and polluting on a massive scale, Gina?
We have, as human beings, the power to make place sacred. We don't have to go to a church, a synagogue, a temple to be in a sacred space. We have that, what I call superpower, to make place sacred. And when you make place sacred, you have that responsibility to ensure the sacredness, to share with others that this place is sacred. The space that we're in right now, the water that we have, that we take for granted, especially in the Great Lakes.
Absolutely.
But once we start building that sacredness, and that segues to relationship.
Leave us with a call to action, Seth. What can individuals do to make a difference here for our planet?
I think to build on what Gina just said, look around your neighborhood and really think about how it might look from the perspective of an animal. And that might mean if you have a yard, maybe think about, can you use some more native plants? Can you create some more interesting vegetative structure? If you don't, this isn't glamorous, but look at your garbage. We know that when we have a lot of garbage loose in these neighborhoods, that attracts rats. It's going to deter other species that we might want to see. Think about, can you secure that in a better way? Can you contribute to a community garden that's part of your neighborhood?
Yeah.
Just look around, because I think when you look at things with the eyes of more than just humans, you'll see things in a completely new way.
That's Seth Magley, who's Senior Director of the Urban Wildlife Institute, Gina Roxas, who's Citizen of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation and Executive Director of Trickster Cultural Center, and Nithya Jaka, who is with Chicago's Eat for Impact Initiative. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to the top Chicago area news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, WBEZ Afternoon producer Noah Jennings, and our sports contributor Cheryl Ray Stout. Some concerning news to start. Former Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley was hospitalized. So here's Claire with the details.
So he's had several strokes in the past. This one, unfortunately, just a couple of days before his 84th birthday, which is on Friday. But Daley's brother, William, being pretty nonchalant about it, telling the Sun-Times that he is, quote, fine now. He's home. He's doing some rehab stuff. And that's about it. That's life. That's a direct quote. The former mayor was hospitalized. He tells us only briefly. William described the stroke as his brother's third and a relatively minor one. So that's the latest from the Daily Clan.
All right. We'll send our prayers that way. Let's pivot here because we got a lot of sports news to talk about. Bulls coach Billy Donovan, he's leaving the team. Anybody surprised by this news?
About time.
The Bulls have had a terrible time this season.
That's for sure they have. So I'm surprised, but I'm not, given how much, you know, obviously ownership was enamored with him, but also at the same time, there's a lot of change going on within the organization. So it feels like time.
Cheryl, did this come as a surprise to you?
Not quite a surprise, but I think for Billy, it probably was the right thing for him to do because he was going to have a new front office that he may have to deal with or not deal with. I don't blame Billy for what happened with this team. I look at that front office. It was horrible.
Mm. Tell us more.
Well, the thing is, you have you had Arturis Karnastrovas and Mark Eversley making these making decisions that really impacted this team. Billy Donovan was like he was trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle, but didn't have the pieces. And that really hurt them. And the fact is, when you trade players at the trading deadline, and gives up all these new players, and he's supposed to win with any of that or try to tank?
Yeah.
No, there was no direction with that front office.
Yeah, that makes things difficult. I remember going to a game about a month or two ago and just not recognizing anybody on the court, Noah. And he, Donovan, was with the team for, what, six seasons?
He was for six seasons, and it was mixed amounts of success. There was only really one trip to the playoffs in there. But like Cheryl said, he did show a lot of adaptability with the teams that he had and the pieces he was given. And it really did feel like often, like he really was getting the most out of the players that he did have at his disposal. Like he did not have championship teams or anything close to that really constructed during his time here, but he was bringing in a lot of experience as a coach that was helping with young players. And so that's something that's going to be interesting to see if they're going to be able to replicate that in the new coach that they're able to bring in.
Cheryl, how would you sum up his overall track record with the Bulls over those six seasons?
Well, his record was 226 and 256. It was well below, 500.
Okay.
It was tough. And the fact is that he's probably going to get a job someplace else. There are teams that are going to want him. North Carolina wanted him. There are NBA teams that want him. So his standard in the NBA is high. And other teams are going to want him.
Claire, meanwhile, training camp for the Chicago Sky, that's kicking off.
Yeah, they are training. They've got a game on Saturday. It's going to be played in South Dakota against the Phoenix Mercury. Just kind of a new thing. They're trying to get some more fanship across the country. Underway for the Sky.
Yeah, and former Sky star Angel Reese, we know that she was traded to the Atlanta Dream earlier this month. And she has some critiques on the coaching.
It's so funny because in Wicker Park right now, right by the blue line, there's this huge Angel Reese ad, one of the giant ones for Victoria's Secret. And looks so fantastic, but she's sort of glaring down at the city. Yes, Angel Reese, as we know, had some issues with the Sky's coaching. She made some comments she later apologized for. She was suspended for a game and a half, never ended up coming back really at the end of last season. But recently this week, she said that her current coach, which she's now in the Atlanta Dream, this is Carl Schmeschko, has been pushing her to be uncomfortable, she says, in ways that she hasn't been before.
Interesting.
She said she isn't used to or hasn't been used to being pushed this hard. So I think inferring to Sky's current coach, Tyler Marsh, sort of inferring that he wasn't pushing her enough. But as we know, Reese developed under Teresa Weatherspoon, and she initially did work with Marsh, but later sort of indicated that she just needed more rigorous coaching, which it sounds like she's getting in Atlanta. So hats off to her.
Yeah, sounds like a good move for her based on what she wants. Cheryl, any evidence, in your view of Reese being undercoached while she was here in Chicago?
I don't buy that. In fact, I was just at the training facility where they're training right now, and there's intensified coaching going on all the time. And I was at the practices last year where I saw it. So that's an excuse. I think one of the issues was when she threw the players, especially Courtney Vandersloot, under the bus to a Tribune reporter, that hurt her standing with the team more than anything else.
Okay.
And so when you have that going on, you know, I think she's somebody that, yes, I think she needs to have like some veterans that are stars to push her to. She liked Teresa Weatherspoon, but Teresa Weatherspoon didn't act as a coach. She acted as a player. So there's some mixed messages here as far as coaching goes. We'll see what Tyler Marsh is going to do because he's got a whole lot of new players. And again, the intensity that I'm seeing at those practices is pretty strong.
Hmm. Well, and you alluded to this in some tape that Cheryl sent this week, but Marsh is sort of saying that things just feel different. Things feel refreshed, kind of charged up. And that, you know, is with the absence of Angel Reese.
Sounds like they're throwing jab for jab.
Little bit.
Subliminal jab for jab. Let's pivot here. Governor Pritzker, he's taking what seems like a different approach to insider trading and those prediction markets than President Trump is. Claire, what should we know?
Yeah, Pritzker at this point moving to bar people, anyone in state government, from engaging in any insider trading through those prediction markets. Pritzker issued an executive order that would prohibit all state officials, any appointees, employees from using or sharing that non-public information obtained through their jobs, essentially to profit from some of these markets and some of these websites. Pritzker also accused Trump allies of sort of betting on the prediction markets and appearing to influence the outcomes for personal profit. As we know, Trump is trying to block states from regulating these markets, and Pritzker is not having it.
Not at all. Any other stories you're following today, Claire?
Yes, it's Earth Day, so... State of Illinois released a list of top performing recycling communities. The state's Feed the Cart campaign found that West Suburban Lyle topped the list, a household average of 700 pounds of recyclables every year.
Shout out to Lyle.
Lyle. It's kind of a lot. The total amount of materials collected across the state's six most populated counties totaled 500,000 tons, which is equal to filling Soldier Field with recycling an estimated six times.
Well, we have something to aspire to.
So we're doing our part, at least. And Lyle's certainly doing theirs.
It's what the Bears did most seasons prior to this past year.
There you go, Noah.
While you're talking Bears, Noah, I'm going to keep you right there because the NFL draft, it runs from tomorrow through Saturday. How are things looking for our Bears?
You know, this is an interesting year. You know, as a fan, the draft, especially when it comes to the Bears, was something that I would really look into and really look at all the mock drafts and who's coming because of, you know, the poor season that they had the year before. But last year was a great season. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the Bears aren't picking till 25th
in
the draft. So now 15th, there's so 15th. Many.
15th?
15th.
Oh, I'm sorry. 25th. And so there's a number of ways the board could fall in all of that time with all these different teams picking. So there's a few different out lanes that I look to, you know, something like on defense. The defensive line was an area of concern for much of last season as far as how much pressure they could get on the quarterback. So that could mean somebody like a Peter Woods from Clemson or a Caden McDonald from Ohio State. You've also had a couple safeties leave in Jaquan Brisker and Kevin Byer during the offseason, and there's still a slot open at safety, so maybe that's a Dylan Thineman out of Oregon. Another interesting spot could be at offensive tackle. Ozzie Trapillo, who was their second-round pick last year, he had a really bad injury at the end of last season, and it's likely going to keep him out at least the start of this next season. So if they go tackle, that could be a sign as to how they view that. But again, like I said, it's 25th overall, and in his tenure as general manager, Ryan Poles has really preached and executed the best player available sort of mentality, regardless of position. So it could really be any number of positions there.
So in addition to all of that, Cheryl, I mean, what would you say Bears leaders need to do to have a successful draft?
Well, they avoid? They want to make sure that they become faster on defense. And that's the trademark of their defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen. That's what he wants, and that's what he needs, and that's what they're going to be honing in on. They have to make sure that they solidify, because they lost players to free agency, and the fact is, when you lose some of those players, like a Kevin Byard, that hurts you, because he was a leader in the locker room, and also with all the interceptions he had. Mm-hmm. That's important to be able to replace that. The thing is, when you pick so low, you have to really watch what all the other teams do. And so you have your board there, you have the players you want, but you never know if you're going to get who you really want at that point.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a new poll of Chicagoans from Suffolk University and the Tribune. It shows that a majority want the Bears Stadium in Arlington Heights and not Indiana. Surprise, surprise. What is the very latest on the Bears Stadium saga, Cheryl?
Well, just recently, George McCaskey and the front office visited Hammond, Indiana. You know, they've been looking at that. But the General Assembly is supposed to have a vote coming soon about the mega sports package. So that's going to be really key. If they don't get that done, the Bears will go to Hammond, Indiana. But they, you know, that's really important. And, you know, I live 6 minutes from that, from where the Arlington Park racetrack used to be. And around this area, people want it. They're not like saying we don't want to have, you know, the Bears here. They want it because the businesses around there
right.
really want to, you know, get part of it and be part of it and make money. That's right. what everybody wants to do.
Exactly. Noah, let's pivot to the Sox here. They're below 500, but there are five teams with worse records right
hey,
now.
That's how you got to look
so
at it.
So the Chicago White Sox are not the worst.
For once.
You're a super fan. I mean, how are you feeling about all this?
Well, you know, I was here on opening day, and I preached this idea of
that's
the team
right.
being fun bad. And I was very nervous the first couple weeks of the season because it was a whole lot of bad and not much fun. And I was like, oh, no, what did I tell the people of Chicago? But I have to say, it feels like they're turning a corner a little bit, at least on the offensive side. The bats are humming. The story of the season for sure is the star from Japan that they signed, Munetaka Murakami. It certainly seems like 29 other MLB teams really overthought it when it came to whether his game will translate, because it is right now. He's
yes.
already at 9 home runs on the season, and he currently has a streak of 4 straight games with a home run. And, you know, we've seen all these pops in, you know, in baseball over time. If somebody comes over and they get hot right at the start, but then they fall off. The thing that he's showing a lot of plate discipline. And so he's drawing walks. He's not just swinging at every pitch that comes his way and getting lucky with a few and is going to have that fall off.
Strategy.
He has a lot of plate discipline right now, too. So it's an exciting time.
Worth the investment, it sounds like.
And it was a cheap deal, so it absolutely was.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl, the Cubs are flying, though. They won, what, 7 in a row? But first, I've got to talk to you about this. We're going to talk about urban wildlife later in the show for Earth Day. And at Wrigley Field this week, Monday, there was a goose. Last night, a massive rat. Please share. What is going on?
Well, everybody wants to be at Wrigley, including the geese
including
and the rats.
Including the animals.
But it was funny because there was a ball hit to left field where the goose was. And the goose was kind of, you know, was walking around, and then I thought, oh, he took flight. And the left fielder was like trying to figure out what he had to do because the goose takes off and flies away. You know, it's like there's something beautiful about seeing that. But as far as rats, you're going to find them no matter where you're at in Chicago or
they're
any place
so
else.
They're so big, though. I think it's the size of these rats that that's just
drawing
so much attention.
And you don't want to make them a pet, so you just leave them alone.
Absolutely not. So what is going right with the Cubs this season so far? Why are they so hot?
Well, you know, they had a rough start to begin with, but things have settled down. Their hitting has been on par. Nico Hoerner is really having an outstanding year in every phase. At the plate, in the field, he just is doing really, really well. He was the National League Player of the Week last week. You have him, the starting pitching, you know, with the injuries they've had, losing Cade Horton was a really tough one. But they've gotten some good starts out of Javier Assad, Colin Ray, and then last night, Shota Imanaga, who had a rough first start, but he's been really brilliant since then. He pitched 7 innings of really solid ball. So you have that, and the defense is really, if you sit and watch a Cub game right now and you watch their defense, that helps their pitching staff so much.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all three phases, and also, well, during the streak, they're playing two teams that are really bad right now, the Mets and the Phillies. Ha, ha, ha. I love you saying that.
That's WBEZ's Cheryl Ray Stout, Noah Jennings, and Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.